Welcome back to the Roundtable. I'm Joe Donahue. If you missed yesterday, we're switching things up on the program each day. We're now starting off with an open discussion of issues in the news and beyond. Yes, an honest-to-God roundtable on the Roundtable, and we have really cool topics to talk about and an even cooler panel. Dr. Alan Chartok is with us. Good morning, Alan.
How'd you do?
I fine. You? WAMC News Team member David Gustina.
Present.
Just. I know it does. It seems like.
Present.
It seems like I'm taking attendance. And our dear, dear friend who is with us. Well, pretty much every week, because somebody will call in sick and will say, oh, my God, Mike, please come to our rescue. But long scheduled to be with us today, Times Union Managing Editor Mike Spain. Mike, good morning.
Good morning. It's nice to be here in person instead of over the phone.
But yes. Your title is not Managing Editor.
It's Associate Editor.
Associate. I apologize. Yes.
Well, you know. Well, that's higher. That's higher. It's more important.
It's debatable, but it doesn't matter.
There is no managing editor.
There is no managing editor.
Very diplomatic.
So you're everything.
Well, anyway, I'm happy to be here, Joe. And,
we appreciate having you here. Yesterday, one of the more interesting conversations that we had during our first panel was over sugary drinks in New York State. We were talking about, here we go, this is going to become law in New York City.
Yeah.
And then moments after we get off the air, a judge says no. New York City's planned ban on the sale of large sugary drinks will not go into effect today after a state judge blocked the restrictions, calling them arbitrary and capricious. There you go. So what do you think, Mike?
Well, don't you really think that Bloomberg has already won part of this?
Yes.
Right.
Yes, I said that earlier today. You're a brilliant man.
Oh, okay. Well, I was listening to the radio. That was why.
No, but really, truly,
I mean, we would not be talking with Seth Gerber about this.
Brilliance comes with agreeing.
Yeah.
And the opposite.
I know my audience here. but truly, I mean, you know, who would think? You know, people who probably would grab a 16-ounce soda were a larger
bulk.
Well,
for those who are watching the streaming, Joe just held one up.
Right. Diet. But it was 16
Doesn't
ounces.
Matter. It's worth
it. Wasn't beyond 16
Yeah, this is 24
it
ounces.
It would have been legal and legitimate today in New York City had not the judge stepped in.
But, now, but why don't you use an adjective before the judge? Because he's a very large man.
He is.
So, he's rotund. And so you often wonder whether people reach judicial opinion based on their personal needs. You know what I mean?
Well, he does have a reputation for being wary of government authority. That's according to the profile of him in the New York Times today. But he has sided with others who have complained about government rules, and he seems to be kind of cynical about government, overpower. You know?
Speaking of which, David Gustina pointed out to me this morning that the Pew Trust has put a poll out in which—
We're going to talk about that later.
Oh, I'm so sorry.
That's all right.
It's just a little preview.
Well, let's go in order here.
Jump the gun, but that's all right.
Oh, I'm so sorry.
But Bloomberg has been successful. I mean, even now in Albany, you can go into stores and you can see the calorie count on muffins and different kinds of foods and snacks and things. And then you're thinking about it a lot more. Somebody said, I don't know if this is true. Joe, you would know. You're pretty smart. That more Americans will die this year because they overeat instead of
Right. This is the first year that's believed to be true. You mentioned the calorie count on the muffins. I have to say, I don't know if anyone else has done this, but you walk in and you go, oh, my God, they're charging $6.20 for a muffin now? And then you realize, oh, no, that's the calorie count.
Yes.
No, I had no idea.
In New York City, they have the calorie count.
Yeah, well, they do here, too.
Yeah, here, too.
But you look up and you think it's the price sometimes. And although in New York City, it actually is $6.20 for a muffin.
Does it deter you, Joe, when you go in and you see
$625?
No,
I don't look at it.
Well, if I see one next to the other and I'm looking at both, I might choose the one with a lower calorie count, you know, just to try to.
Well, look at you. You're a very thin and fit man.
But still, it's because I'm aware of what I take in, you know. And
so when you think of this, of the mayor, of course, has said he will appeal. Mm-hmm. So,
he might be out of office before there's ever an appellate division ruling in this case. I mean, who knows?
He's just doing the right thing. That's the whole point. He's trying to save lives.
But
he's
is it
great.
Free will? I mean, should we have a right to have 16, 24, 30?
Excuse me, but do you wear a seatbelt when you're driving?
Yeah, and the other side of this is the judge's argument valid? In other words, arbitrary and capricious? Can't you link this to health care costs and costs for everyone in the future if people are getting diabetes and all sorts of other things because of their health?
Yeah. And if you're going to limit things, how come there aren't only 10 cigarettes in a pack? I mean, I don't understand where you draw the line.
Yeah, it is. Maybe it is arbitrary and capricious by the definition of arbitrary and capricious, but so are a lot of things. You know, there's a whole lot of laws and rules that, don't always make sense. You know, why can't you buy a bottle of wine at a supermarket? You know, it seems arbitrary and capricious. You can do that in other states.
Oh, boy. I love this guy.
You know, you can go on and on. But I can remember when they first began to require seatbelts, and people were outraged. They thought it was an infringement
sure.
on their personal rights.
Sure.
Absolutely.
And then there was a period where you couldn't. It would make a beep. The cars would make a beep until you closed the seatbelt.
Yep. Well, I still hate that.
Yes. Yeah.
I still hate that.
Yeah. And now a lot of the...
Well, I always put my seatbelt on, but I just,
But if you forget to put it on, it yells at you now.
Yeah, but four seconds in, give me, just three. I'm just trying to put my sunglasses on. Give me a moment.
Well, first put the seatbelt on and then put the sunglasses on.
I'm not even driving at this point. I'm just in my driveway.
But where is that line, David? You were referring to that.
Well,
line.
I mean, I don't know. I mean, when he makes the argument, he's laid out the argument for all of us. I think, Alan, you might agree with this in your interviews with doctors, but the soft drinks are some of the worst of all. And when you mix that sugar with water, that's where the weight gain is coming from and where they can link most people are getting these bad calories from and hurting their health.
And we know that during World War II, I've been reading a tremendous amount. I really love the subject. When the Brits
right.
were basically being starved out, their health improved.
Right. Because that's right. That was a news, yes.
They ate less meat.
Right.
Meat wasn't available.
The bombs were coming down. The Blitz was on.
And they were healthier for it.
And you would think that would scare the hell out of anybody.
Mean it that way.
They were better.
And you talk about arbitrary and capricious, but I do think, I mean, let's face it, you go into a movie theater and they upsell you to this
giant vat of popcorn.
8 gallons of soda yeah. that you have, Ultimate. You know, where the cup literally biodegrades while it's in your lap. and you think, well, that's just silly. I mean, nobody needs,
you
don't need, as Jay Leno used to say, you don't need a beverage with an undertow. and I think that's absolutely true. Same thing with the Big Gulp. But, so where do you say that as opposed to a large coffee at Dunkin' Donuts where you now have to put in your own sugar as opposed to having them put it in? And, I understand, I sort of understand all sides of it there.
Well, what is the side on that one, Joe? It's interesting, the Dunkin' Donuts idea. I think if you have to put it in yourself, embarrassed.
If you go in the medium one, they'll do it for you. If you go up to the larger one, because it doesn't necessarily mean, so for example.
But it makes sense to me.
Well, it makes sense, but it depends on how much sugar you use in the sense of, because they're ultimately, it's the size of the beverage. It doesn't have to do with the amount of the sugar. So if you put in a teeny tiny bit of sugar, it doesn't make any difference. You could have much more sugar in the smaller vessel than you would in the larger one. Do you know what I'm saying?
I do, but to which I respond, details.
Well, but in here again, that just seems like a hard thing to
isn't
legislate.
Isn't the whole point, though, that everybody now will stop and think for a moment,
yes.
and they'll ponder
not
this.
Everybody.
Not everybody.
Not that judge, not that very large judge. He is not going to stop and think, and he did what came naturally to him, which is to say government is overstepping its
bounds. You don't think it was based on legal opinion? You think it was based on personal?
Yes, I do.
A judge would do that? They'd substitute their own personal feelings for what's the law?
Sure.
I'm shocked.
It happens all the time.
And on that note, we're going to take a break. We will return. We have many more topics to discuss. Let's talk about the minimum wage hike and much, much more coming up on our Roundtable Roundtable. You're listening to the Roundtable on WAMC. Don't forget, you can join in and get in on the action here by tweeting to at WAMC Roundtable, by going to the Roundtable page, also by going to the Roundtable page at WAMC.org, and commenting on the post associated with this discussion, or commenting at Facebook.com/WAMC Radio. There is a post there as well. And we do hope you will do that, and we'll read from your comments later on. As far as our panel this morning, Alan is here, Mike Spain from the Associate Editor of the Times Union is here, and our Morning Edition host, David Castina, joins us. And we're mulling over several issues. Moving on, we want to talk just briefly on this one because I think it's interesting, but it now seems that in New York State, the New York State Senate has long held off in looking forward when it came to a hike in the minimum wage. They now say that they are open to negotiations. Mm. What do we make of that?
Can I go first? Or
I'm
would
looking
you like
right
my,
at you.
Guest?
I'm looking
okay.
right at you.
Okay. Well, look, here's my theory on all of this. The big kahuna here is the governor. The governor owns both houses of the legislature in many ways. The Democrats are ahead of him in terms of progressive issues like the, you know, wage hikes. The Republicans are scared to death that they won't be in the majority anymore. And we will all remember, won't we, group, that there are four dissident Democrats who some people call the traitors, who made common cause with the Republicans. The day the governor calls all of the Democrats into his office and says, "You're all one party, you listen to me right now and get going," that's the end of the Republicans, and Dean Skelos knows it. He will be consigned to minority hell forever. And he has to do what the governor wants. The governor wants a rise in the minimum wage. He's going to get it. Now, the real question is, what does the governor really want? Does he really want $9 an hour? Does he really want $7.27 an hour? Who knows what he really wants? But when it comes out, that's going to be what the governor wants.
We also, you just interviewed Lee Meringoff from the Marist Institute for Public Opinion, where New Yorkers polled, two-thirds said they want a hike in the minimum wage.
So the question is, what kind of hike will he get? Remember, he was a reborn conservative when he took office. And Bill Hammond has a story in a little too conservative for me, Hammond, but he has a story this morning in the Daily News saying, "Where's the old Cuomo?"
So the Assembly passed a minimum wage bill at $9 an hour. Mike, what do you think it will?
Well, Connecticut is at $8.25, Massachusetts is at $8 an hour, and those are regarded as behind the times. So to go from $7.25 up to $9 seemed to be getting a lot of support. I think Skelos and the Republicans were saying $8.75, but I think you're all in the ballpark of $9. The question is whether it will be indexed or whether it'll just stay at that rate while everything else
for the next 10 years.
Yeah, right. I mean,
well, it doesn't matter because this is becoming a bluer and bluer state, Mike,
right,
as far as I can tell. And
the
reason that Skelos is in the situation he's in right now is because he knows that this game is almost up. So if a couple of years go by and you have Kachik winning unexpectedly, winning a race in a district that was designed for Amador by the Republicans, now you have a situation where it's going to be Democratic. And I think it's the one thing that the governor is scared to death of is that, you know, the inmates will be running the asylum.
You talk about the governor getting, you know, this is what the governor wants and this is what the governor will get. He has said that in order to produce a deal that he's willing to consider a package of business tax cuts. Is he giving away anything real there?
Well, it depends on who has to pay for it. My hero, Deval Patrick in Massachusetts, has just done one of the most gutsy things I've ever seen. He's saying, "Oh, look, I want pre-K for everybody, and in order to pay for that, we're not going to kid around. We have to raise the taxes." Well, that's exactly the opposite from Andrew Cuomo. And, you know, I think it's one of the great gutsy things to do because he's saying, look, to have pre-K for every child, we know it works. End of discussion. Not in just, Andrew Cuomo has talked about, just in a couple of districts, you know, the most needy districts. You know, every child should have it because we know it works. If it works, that's what government is for. It should pay for it. And he's a two-term governor, Deval Patrick, and he doesn't want to go to the White House. And he told me the other day he will not accept the attorney general's job and he will not do anything else. He's going back into the private sector. And here's a guy who's who puts policy above getting to 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue.
Well, President Obama has even endorsed a minimum wage increase to $9. And in a way, that could interfere with New York moving along. If the governor just wants to wait for it to be a national minimum wage, that could delay this till the end of the year. And a lot of people are worried that if it isn't in the budget that's approved by the beginning of April, it won't happen this year in New York.
Yeah, Mike, but the problem with that is that, you know, that the Republicans run the House of Representatives. And so it might be quite a while before it happens happens nationally.
But if New Yorkers use that as an excuse, then it won't happen. I mean, there's a lot of pressure to do it right now or it won't happen for a while.
Yeah, no, I think it's going to happen.
And I think you've all seen the breakdowns. But when we have this discussion, I mean, obviously there's a political discussion, but then there's a discussion of... You can't live on $9.
Well, that's right.
Yes.
God, I mean, what's it about $60 a week more than $7? You know, $7.25.
Yeah, right. I mean, yeah. It is. It really when you look at especially a single wage earner that maybe have two children. It's
living in poverty.
It really is. So it's, I mean, obviously there are the political ramifications and I understand that, but there's also the societal and human issue here as well.
Well, the problem for the Republicans is they have a choice, which kind of death they would like, death by being voted out of office because they're not with it, or death from primary, in which they go into a primary and some of these districts say you're not conservative enough and they off with your head. Hmm.
When you so if you had to look into a crystal ball, what do you think is going to happen as far as are we going to see a deal here in New York?
Yes, goes first.
Well, I think that the momentum is on. If the Republicans in the state Senate are saying it and the Democrats who are in coalition with the leadership are saying it and the governor has said he wants it. And, of course, Shelley Silver wants it in the assembly.
And public opinion supports it.
I'd be surprised if they didn't raise the minimum wage. The question is whether they index it or whether it's $9 or $9.25 an hour and whether it's going to go up as inflation goes up because, you know, those are the details. But doesn't it seem like it's inevitable?
Yes.
And with that, we are going to move on to some other topics in our next half hour. Before we do that, we want to do two things. One, we want to remind you that you can join in online by tweeting to @WAMCRoundtable, @WAMCRoundtable, by going to the roundtable page at WAMC.org and commenting on the post associated with this discussion, or commenting at Facebook.com/WAMC Roundtable. There is a post there as well, and we would love to hear from you. It is a vital part of what we do, and we'd love to hear your comments. Coming up in our next half hour, we will talk about the conclave set to elect a new pope getting underway. Also, the TSA says yes to small knives on planes, and a new report from Pew saying for every 10 Americans, only 3 trust the government. Are you one of them? We'll find out next on the Roundtable. We're having fun in Studio A here on the Roundtable for our Roundtable on the Roundtable, and we want you to join in on that fun. Tweet us at WAMC Roundtable by going to Roundtable page at WAMC.org and commenting on the post associated with this discussion, or commenting at Facebook.com/WAMC Radio. There's a post there as well. Sarah LaDuke will be in a few minutes and share your comments, so if you want to get in under the wire there, you know, do it now. Again, @WAMC Roundtable to tweet roundtable page at WAMC.org and commenting on the posts associated with this discussion, or commenting at Facebook.com/WAMC Radio. We have been talking about some very interesting issues. Alan alluded to this earlier in our conversation about a new, and I know you guys talked about it this morning, a new report out. The Pew Research Center in Washington has found that fewer Americans than ever trust the decisions made by government. In a report that is subtitled, Duh.
Government stinks.
For every 10 Americans, only 3 trust the government. Data collected from a survey taken in January indicates that all demographics and partisan groups experienced an increasing lack of faith in government leadership, according to the Pew survey. And it is... I don't know. Again, does this surprise anyone?
Well, it's one of the 3 great lies, as I pointed out to David earlier today, which is I can't repeat the other 2, but I'm from the government. I'm here to help you.
So
weren't you just saying that Governor Patrick in Massachusetts was doing the right thing by raising taxes to educate preschoolers so that they do better?
Yes.
Well, do you trust him?
Yes. But he's an anomaly.
Oh, okay.
He's different from the rest of them.
So there are some trustworthy people in government. It's just that government as a whole doesn't do very well.
No, there are some trustworthy people. Look, I married an untypical woman, a wonderful woman. I'm not saying all women are bad by any means, but I did marry a wonderful woman.
How did we get there?
I was just wondering, on the couch long enough and get some interesting things out of you.
Saying.
Let me follow up.
Do you generally trust government?
Do I generally trust government? Yeah. More than no, but not as individuals. So, for example, if you take the people who run for political office, they make you hasten Jason to bring the basin because they're always saying sort of the self-serving stuff. Are you following me?
Mm-hmm.
About the Jason part?
Yes.
Yeah, the Seussian logic.
Oh, yes, whatever.
So when you look...
Let's bring this down to my level.
80% at some point in this graph show that 80% have a distrust in the government. That cannot be good.
No, and think about the guns. I mean, one of the major reasons given by the gun people is that they need their guns for when they need them for the government.
Correct.
The government's going to take them away,
I don't know how. I mean, I'd like to see some data on how many gun owners share that feeling. I mean, I think there's like a wide disparity of why gun owners, favor, availability.
Just for the sake
of
disclosure, do you have a gun?
No, I do.
You don't?
I do not.
Do not? Okay.
I do not.
Okay.
Never did.
Yeah, I just wanted to make sure you're not like the judge who... got rid of them.
In Manhattan, who's a big soda drinker, apparently.
And a big guy.
Yeah, big guy. No, but I don't know that everybody who owns a gun fears that the government is going to come to their house and they need to keep their gun so that they can, end the tyranny if government goes wacko or something like that. I mean, that's probably a subset, I would suggest. And I hope it's a small subset. I don't know what you guys think.
But when you look at the number of politicians in New York who have been paraded with their handcuffs for the things that they've done, you look at redistricting in the state, you look at nationally what's happened with major politicians, and you can't help but believe when we can't even sort out our business to take care of the American people that the American people raise their hands up and say, as Alan might say, feh.
Yeah, feh.
But with all its flaws, it's done okay. I mean, some things have worked, I mean, we do have...
Social Security.
Lots of successes, yeah.
Medicare.
Social Security, right.
But look at the poll. More than twice as many Hispanics as whites trust the federal government. More and more blacks than whites trust the government. Isn't that interesting?
How about men and women? Is that there?
I don't know. The other one that I thought was that most of the change was among Democrats and independents.
Yeah.
You mean having less?
Yeah, having less faith. Trust. Yeah.
Well, it's unfortunate because I think it just interferes with people being motivated to get involved in the government and people with talent. If you were praising Deval Patrick for his, for not having any real political ambitions beyond the 2 years that he spent as governor. I mean, we need more talent.
Yeah.
I mean, you need more talent in government, and this kind of cynicism in this, that the survey shows probably discourages people who could help from getting into government, and then it leaves it easier for people who are more self-motivated. And
I touched
well, some of it is warranted, though, if you think about you think about this endless nonsense about we need a pay raise, we're only going to work 2 days a week. People who have to, as you pointed out before, are living on minimum wage, they don't like it. The other thing is that the government tends to obfuscate by making language of its own. Go down to the legislature sometimes and sit there and listen to first reading, second reading, third reading, lay it aside, and all the rest of that kind of stuff, when it would be easy to make government more accessible to people.
And in New York, Governor Cuomo gets some things done, gay marriage, we're talking about minimum wage. But on the national level, it appears they can't get things done. And to me, that's where people get apathetic about government. They turn away from it and they say, if you can't even compromise and work for our benefit, then how can we have a government that works?
Well, absolutely. And what does it say about democracy? What does it say about people being a part of that democratic process, number one? Number two, this is what I touched on this yesterday, but the overall concern of what's the tipping point? At what point do the American people say, all right, I've had enough and I'm actually going to do something about it?
Well, I think they turn away.
Yeah, that's the unfortunate thing. Rather than they get frustrated and they don't participate and they don't vote and they don't know the issues and it's too complicated, and we have a world where you can just throw your iPod on and go off in your own world. So,
but so much of it is sort of self-justification for inactivity. I mean, spent my career thinking about how to motivate young people to get involved, and they don't want to. And so now they come along and they say, they're all corrupt, they're all crooks, they're all this, they're all that. They're not. They're no. by no means all that way. Some of them aren't. Some of them are. And then they don't want to vote. They don't want to do this. And this becomes a sort of round thing,
self-fulfilling prophecy.
Circular thing.
Fewer people get involved, and fewer people.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, fewer people have a role in defining what government does, and
David, you're translator. I like that.
Well, we've
interpreter.
We've been together a long time.
Yes, we have. We've been married for a while.
So when you think about that of where we go from here, and I think Alan's absolutely right that it is, it feeds itself, and you get to this point of, all right, well, what's going to change that, and what's going to get us out of that? And because more and more people turn away, but I mean, Alan said this yesterday, and I believe it to be true, until it affects them. And to which I say, my God, if it's not affecting you now, when the hell is it going to affect you?
Well, I think people want to be inspired. I think people want to be motivated. If you look at the 2008 election, people were ready for someone to come along and inspire them. And the turnout was big among young people, and the involvement was big. And that's an encouraging sign, and people are a little more discouraged right now. But it can go the other way. American public opinion, if you don't know what it is right now, just check in a little while, it'll be different,
This poll seems to show that, despite all that hope, that has been washed away by this sort of realization that nothing's changed.
Well, I'm still thinking about those election results and how many wonderful women were out there, voting in large numbers, because there really is a difference between people, and the sort of hard-boiled man thing. We're going to vote for this guy, he's going to go to war, and the sensibility of women getting involved and getting their children involved and doing this. I just think it's fascinating. And that's why I asked you before whether this poll, you saw the difference between men and women.
Well, and you're right. There's been an influx of a lot of new women and other minorities into the legislatures, not only in the states, but in the federal government. But then again, we see that, as we hear from a lot of folks, especially the American public, they feel the game is loaded. Right, Alan? I mean, the money in politics today. Well,
and it is loaded. That's the whole point. And here's Andrew Cuomo saying, okay, the one thing we got to do is make sure we have campaign financing. Of course, because the Democrats will do much better with campaign financing.
And they're able to call for it and at the same time not pass anything.
Yeah, because don't forget those guys who are sitting there in the assembly all got here the old way.
That's right.
Do they really want to give some money to some kid who's going to run against them for free?
Yeah.
According to Pew, almost 60% of people, this is where we'll end this, but according to Pew, almost 60% of people in the United States had confidence in the federal government before President Bill Clinton left office. When Bush left, national trust was down to 25%.
It was a tough time. It was just a tough period, and people became discouraged by two foreign wars that seemed unending. Yeah. Don't you think?
What, are you some kind of Republican?
I don't belong to any organized political party.
Said Will Rogers. Yeah. I'm a Democrat.
I'm neither one.
Reminder, we would love for you to join us. We'll tell you how in just a moment. Coming up on the program, we're going to talk about a couple of other issues, including the TSA standing by their decision that it's okay to have a pocket knife on a plane with you. However, shampoo, no. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC. Welcome back to our roundtable. On the roundtable, a lot of discussions still to discuss, and your chance to get in. And here is our producer, Sarah LaDuke, to tell us exactly how you can do that.
Hello, boys.
Hello.
I like it.
You can comment by going to our website. The roundtable page at WAMC.org has a post that has the date and says roundtable on the roundtable next to it. You can comment on that post. We're keeping an eye on that. Appropriate comments will be approved and distributed as we see fit. You can reply to us on Twitter, twitter.com/WAMC roundtable. And we also have a post on our Facebook page, facebook.com/WAMC radio. You can comment on the associated post. It is currently pinned to the top of our page, so it's easy to find.
You know, I think back to the old days when, on Broadway, when, you always have to wait that night for the New York Times to come out with a review, and then the entire cast would sort of like, set up all night.
And wait for the
paper to arrive. In our now digital world, Sarah's going to tell us exactly what the reviews are right now.
Nothing really review-ish. Just
okay, good.
Contributions to the discussion.
We'll take that.
Justin Mass on Twitter @JMass says, what about minimum wage jobs that include gratuity? I've never understood why those are excluded from minimum wage requirements. Obviously, he said that in regard to the minimum wage discussion.
Yes.
I don't get it. So the point is that...
Remember on Vox Pop, you talked to somebody called in a waiter or somebody who said that the minimum wage for servers should be raised because they calculate the amount of tips you're going to get. And it's lower than the traditional minimum wage. I think that's what...
Right. They can hire you at a lower wage, assuming that you're going to be a good waiter or waitress and get tips.
Yeah, that's wrong.
Okay.
Okay. So you agree with Justin.
Okay.
Yes. All right. Off on that
list.
Moving on, indeed.
Going back, not moving on just yet, because another Twitterer commented and said, people would stop tipping if servers already made the same money as others. They're tipped because they make less, to which Justin Mass then replied again, you would stop tipping? I wouldn't.
Oh, stop.
Yeah,
I give 20% no matter what, because these people deserve a living wage.
I'm so bad.
They work very hard.
I feel bad at 20%. I have to say, I up it. I just feel bad. I mean, obviously,
20% is not enough.
Well, I mean, it depends on the server. Like, if you get really, really good service, then yeah, I go beyond the call of duty because I feel like they are working very, very
hard.
You're
right. Of course, you're right.
Hustling.
Yeah, but again, it depends on the service.
It also works in your favor the next time you order.
Well, when you walk in, they, yes.
Well, no. My mother used to say, the secret of a tip is, are you coming back?
That's right. Absolutely. Sarah LaDuke, our producer, thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Appreciate it.
Sarah.
All right. Let us discuss some other issues here and get people tweeting and Facebooking and going to our website as well. I just find this to be an interesting story. The TSA is standing by their knife decision, and... What they're saying is that it is okay to have small knives. The Transportation Security Administration's announcement last week that pocket knives and other previously prohibited items will be allowed in airline cabins starting in April has sparked an outcry among many concerned travelers, lawmakers, and aviation professionals. The new rules will not ease screening for passengers, some say, while adding an unnecessary threat to the safety of airline crews and passengers. And, one of the things that's come out of this is just how confusing all this is of what you can and cannot bring on a plane still 12 years after 9/11.
Politics of managing fear.
Well, you can't bring a 16-ounce beverage.
What you can do, and I always wear a necktie, on a plane, because if there's a guy sitting in front of me who is trying to, you know, light his shoe, I'm going to give him the necktie right around his neck. Is that a good idea?
Well, I think it brings up your point, which is if not a knife, it could be something else.
Sure.
I mean, so
yeah.
So at I think when you say when you look at this, okay, nail clippers. All right, that makes sense. Okay, they let you have nail clippers.
I hate nail clippers.
Well,
but what do you?
But
do?
You can bring them on a plane.
Yeah, but it's wrong because it annoys me, and they go clip, clip, clip.
Well, not if they're doing it on a plane, but they can bring it on the plane
but
with them.
Yeah, but they're annoying, and they use them on a plane.
But that's more
really
the aesthetic issue, I guess.
This is your pilot speaking. I'm going to be clipping my nails for the next 20 minutes at 30,000 feet.
A recognition that people were getting on planes with a lot of things, and they just it's too much trouble to worry about this. And there's some discussion about targeting people who you think, even though civil libertarians are fearful of this, that there is a effort to have you know, the TSA move back towards targeting individuals by the destination that they're going to or by their
profile.
History or profiles, basically. And that would be a whole lot more effective than just checking to see whether they have a 4-ounce bottle of shampoo or whatever it is.
I mean, I have to say, when I read this and I thought, wow, out of all the things that they could repeal, it's going to be knives.
Yeah.
I mean, I thought that because, I mean, let us not forget that the 9/11
box cutters,
yep, which were legal to bring on the plane. You could bring on the plane. They passed through security.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know. I mean, it seems to me an interesting thing that if how much, and we don't know at this point, of how much of this overall is being reconsidered of what we can and
sure
cannot bring on a plane.
Sure. But they have collected tens, hundreds of thousands, I believe, of knives when
yeah
you get there. And
well,
they, you have that
have
pocket,
pocket
knife
in their
thing,
pocket, sure.
And you've got
yep
a choice. Go home or throw the knife into the box. And they've collected a lot of stuff that they don't want.
I was in an airport and saw a young man, probably couldn't have been more than 12 years old. His mother had bought him a hunting knife. A huge hunting knife was in the carry-on bag, and they confiscated it right
well
in front
of
everybody.
Well, what could they have been thinking?
Right, and she argued, I just bought him this knife. And
well, and that's, you know, and that's what...
There are companies that have services at major airports where you can turn it in
and they'll mail it, right?
And they'll mail it. You pay them a certain amount of money, and they'll mail it home to you. And but they're not at every airport. But that's
well,
it's just become a such a big business of.
It's also why God made glove compartments. you know, you run back to the
can
car,
we get one of those on
put
the plane?
It in that. Absolutely. So knives with blades that are 2 point, and you love I just. Fascinated how they came up with this, but 2.36 inches.
Well, if you've got one of those against somebody's jugular vein, that could be a very dangerous weapon.
Well, I mean, are you going to then screen out people who know judo or
yeah,
karate
right
or, you know, or other martial arts who could just...
Hi!
Right.
And it looks like they're doing actual aerial science. Here's the one line that I saw, Joe. The TSA says the changes are part of their risk-based approach to security and bring the U.S. in line with European standards. Well, what does that mean? Are they doing an actuarial analysis?
Yes. Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah, it does. It's statistics. It's what they regard as real risk versus perceived risk.
It's like the oldest joke in the whole world about the guy who goes on with a bomb, and they say, you can't bring the bomb on. And he says, well, no, but the statistical chances of
sure
two bombs on the plane, you know, you remember that whole thing.
No. Yes, I do, Alan. Thank you. You know,
the right
one, of the, one of the things that is being said about this is that it just adds to the confusion
yeah
because right now a knife is a knife and you
yeah
can't bring it on and no knives, no problem. There's no confusion because you can't have a knife, whether it's 2.3 inches or 4 inches or 6 inches or whatever the case may be. And now you're adding to that confusion. And I think it will be interesting. But also you wonder, and then this comes on the heels of saying, well, you're going to have less TSA workers
yeah
there. You're going to have
the sequester.
You're going to, the lines are going to be at the airport. I mean, is this all something
this
to sort of like
quickly
speed things up? I mean, I don't know.
Mm-hmm. So do you think the size of
the
knife counts?
Yeah.
Do you,
well,
I mean,
well,
in other words, do you guys think size
Well, I mean, I think there's a difference in I'm not engaging in what you're talking about, but what I am going to engage in is the fact that there is difference between what I think my father always called a penknife. Mm-hmm. Right, you know, mm-hmm. a little pocket knife that you have in your pocket that helped you.
Yeah.
And by the way, if they'd stop packaging thing with all that damn tape, you wouldn't need one of these knives even in your life.
That's right.
But it can't be a fixed blade.
Right.
Right. It has to be a folding over blade, and you know, maybe, you know, it's an actuarial decision based on statistics. That's what it was.
Mm-hmm. So, mm-hmm. Finally. On our final note, of course, it's the lead story throughout the world, and the papal conclave is set in mere moments, actually, to begin and to go into to be locked away in secret election to choose a successor to retired Benedict, Pope Benedict. And the question is, I guess, whether this is something. There's so much secrecy to this. We don't know. We don't, you know, we have no idea what's going on here. So we don't know if it's going to be quick, if we're going to be, you know, looking for the smoke to rise in mere hours or days or weeks. And I know that this decision was something that was fast forwarded so we could hopefully get a new head of the Catholic Church by Easter.
Now, at 3:30 this morning, the BBC had, as I was driving in, the BBC had the official biggest historian of the church on, and he said he had a return ticket to go back to wherever he was for Saturday. And he estimated that this thing would be done, based on his analysis, careful analysis, by Wednesday of this week.
That sounds
right.
Well,
that's tomorrow.
Yes.
Right? Tomorrow.
Yeah. I mean, it sounds right. They, you know, the stories that have been written about the process say that they'll do a poll today, and it'll kind of identify which direction it's going, and then they'll come back fresh tomorrow. And it's 115 cardinals, and they need 77 votes to elect a new pope. And if, you know, somebody gets 50 that first vote, they're going to know that that guy's the front runner, and they'll come back the next day.
The rush will be on.
Yeah, the rush will be on. It's momentum. You know, it's a lot like any other process where caucuses happen and you look for candidates and you see the way it's going and you kind of just let it go.
Now, you three guys are Catholic. How important is this election to you?
Well, on the heels of the story in the New York Times about the Catholic flock maybe not agreeing with all the doctrine of the bishops that running the church, you know, it's very important to know who they will pick and what that might portend in the future for,
you know, I think
Catholics.
I think what a lot of the cardinals have said in the meetings before the conclave actually kicked off today was that you need a pastoral. There's a lot of people who said you need a pastoral pope who's going to be popular with people and be able to communicate with people and to be able to travel around the world. So we'll know maybe by tomorrow.
But still be we'll out see. Of touch with most Catholics, right?
Well, I mean, you know, whether, and then it gets into
well, and we'll see. I mean, are they paying attention? Is that going to change things or won't it?
We'll all see. We're out of time today, but I want to thank everyone who joined us on the panel. Of course, Alan, Associate Editor of the Times Union, Mike Spain, and our Morning Edition host, David Gustina. Gentlemen, thank you
Thanks,
very
guys.
Much.
Thanks, guys.
Thank
You're
you.
Listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.
Support for WAMC comes from Stickley Audi and Company, Albany, New York, featuring Mission Oak and Cherry solid wood furniture, upholstery and leather in classic and modern styles. Fine furniture since 1900, StickleyAudi.com. And the Joint Replacement Center of Northern Berkshire at North Adams Regional Hospital, helping people regain mobility and resume a normal lifestyle. NBHealth.org.
This is Northeast Public Radio, WAMC FM HD 90.3 Albany, WRUN HD 90.3 Remsen Utica, WAMK HD 90.9 Kingston, WOS.